We do something we often do is do a panel of producers who are all going to speak briefly on a common topic. And this year's topic is how do we manage, measure, evaluate efficiency in our operations from a Count Camp operation standpoint. So I'm going to call, rather than have them all set up here together, you get to see them all together in the bullpen session this evening. I'm just going to have them come up and each use their share of time as if they're individual speakers, and you'll get to hear each one of them. The thing we're going to do, we have 60 minutes, so each of them gets 20 minutes. So I'm going to keep introductions really short because I'm pretty sure each of them, as to the degree that I know them, are pretty talkative types. So me doing intros is kind of going to cut into that. And I'll let them finish introducing themselves beyond name and location. The last comment I make is as we chose the people to bring in, we wanted to represent as many of the states, of the four states that sponsor the Range Beef Count Symposium. So we have three of the states involved. I'll introduce them by the state they come from. So with no further introduction, I introduce Dr. Trey Patterson, who is here from Wyoming.
Good afternoon. Glad you were able to stick it out today. Kind of towards the end of the day, we'll try to get this wrapped up for you. It's really an honor to come speak to the Range Beef Cow Symposium once again. I think this is my fifth time to speak at this symposium. I started at CSU, went to Nebraska, went to South Dakota, and circled around to Wyoming. I've had children born in all four states associated with this symposium. So let's talk about cow efficiency a little bit. I think as this producer panel that we have together are going to take some different approaches, which is by design, I think, to give you some different perspectives on how we look at cow efficiency. I think one of the things that Bob Taylor taught me when I was at CSU, this is just a personal communication that he made with me, was that profitable cattle are usually productive, But productive cattle are not always profitable. And I think it's that economic component that we're really after in this cow efficiency, isn't it, ultimately? In my mind, it's this idea that, yes, we need a certain level of production, but we need some economic efficiency. So you go back to some data, the Jenkins and Farrell data, that looked at different biological types of cattle and biological efficiency. And so what they were looking at is different breeds of cattle, in this case, two different breeds. But I think we all know at this day and age, we have different biological efficiencies bred into these various breeds. So what I look at this is as the yellow bars being a more of a moderate biological type cow, and the red bars being a heavier, higher biological type cow, heavier milking, larger cow, etc. And what these researchers did is they fed these two different biological types, two different levels of feed intake. And that's what's on the x-axis would be in pounds per year, dry matter intake. And the measurement is the weaning weight per 1,000 pounds of feed intake per cow exposed. So they've got calf production, they have the amount of feed consumed, and then they've built in reproduction over time. And so what they found was in the more liberal feed environment and the heavier feed environment, that heavier biological type, that bigger biological type was more biologically efficient. Makes sense kind of by definition. But on the other hand, when feed were restricted, when the amount of dry matter intake was restricted, that more moderate biological type cow actually had a higher biological efficiency. Work in Nebraska in the late 80s and early 90s looked at this in relation to milk production. And I just wanted to point out milk production because I think it's a real driver in the system. In this study, they were looking at economic efficiency or dollars out per $100 in for similar size cows that had different levels of milk production. And what they found over a multi-year study was that those cows with lower milk production were more economically efficient, had more dollars in per dollars out in this particular study. So Dr. Ritchie, I think it was at these meetings summarizing the 1984 Beef Cow Efficiency Forum, said that liberal feed and or low stress environments, these heavier milking, higher biological type cows were more biologically efficient. But if it was restricted, it was the inverse of that. I think that there's a lot of other factors, though, that we have to consider, especially when we're looking at economic efficiency. This idea, for instance, that I'm not going to get into very, very deep today, we could have taken this approach, is grazing management. It's stocking rate. If I'm looking at cow efficiency and I look at rotational grazing versus season-long grazing and the ability to harvest AUMs, we've been able to document on our operation that we can increase AUM harvesting by simply having a planned time control grazing system. So that's just a factor that you have to consider. But if you're going to be fully stocked in these western range environments, in other words, we're going to have some grazing pressure. That's the animal unit days per ton of available forage, some grazing pressure. We typically find that these heavier biological types, these heavier milking cows, will tend to weed themselves out if you're culling on reproduction. You could create a liberal feed situation in a western ranch environment by just reducing grazing pressure. And so, but we feel like to dilute overheads in most ranches, you need to be fully stocked. So that becomes an issue. Then there's the other idea, regardless of whether you've got high quality feeds, liberal feed resources, if you will, or not, is can you run more smaller or moderate size biological type cows than larger ones? And I'm gonna skip over that one because I think Lee Leachman's gonna touch on that in his presentation. But I'm going to jump right to longevity. I think this idea of longevity in a production setting is critically important relative to efficiency. And Johann Zeitzman said he measures efficiency, or one way he measures efficiency, coming from South Africa, was if a cow could produce her second calf on or before her third birthday. And so it's this idea of young cow reproduction. And so some metrics that you might want to think about as we go through this discussion, pregnancy rate obviously is important. Cliff Lamb did a good job of explaining that and explaining why. I really think this two-year-old pregnancy rate is a key driver. Pregnancy rate in the young cow. It seems like we talk about average pregnancy rates a lot. We talk about heifer pregnancy rates a lot. But that young cow pregnancy is really important. And is she bred early in the season, or is she bred late? So this time of calving, as Cliff went over fairly clearly, I think your costs that are associated with it. If we're looking at efficiency, I'd like to be thinking about economic efficiency, and so the cost per weaned calf, obviously the carrying capacity, or what's going to be your return on a per acre basis. And then guess what? At the end of the day, right, we have a product to sell. And so we have to have animals that will perform for our customers. And so, yes, this maternal aspect's really important, but we also have to have an end product that's very marketable. You know what the frustration is? It's this idea that we've got all of these different components. It's terribly complex. Genetics and management to environment, changing costs, changing markets, our marketing. There's so many factors. So what I want to do from this point on is kind of drill down into a couple of areas that I think are just have some leverage. They're certainly not all inclusive, and I think the other speakers will address on some other important concepts. But I'm going to go back to what Ron was talking about with net present value just a little bit. And you're saying, oh, crap, at the end of the day, another economics deal? I'm really sorry. But this is so important, and he was right about how important it is. This was some work done in the Sand Hills of Nebraska on a large commercial operation that looked at the net present value of cows of different ages. Okay, and so as you look at this, you're thinking, as Ron explained, this is let's say you take 100 two-year-old cows. It's their net revenue over the course of their lifetime. Their gross revenue, less their cost, and so you get a net cash flow discounted to some discount rate to take account for the time value of money. That's money that could have been earning something somewhere else. And so what was interesting about this, to point this out, is look at the middle-aged cows had a higher net present value than the younger cows. That's not intuitive. You think, why wouldn't the young cows be the ones that have more production potential? They're the ones that tend to be the most expensive. Why aren't they returning the most? And I think a lot of that is around young cow reproduction. It's around cost of production in those young cows. And then it's got marketing component. Marketing of calves off of heifers and young cows, and marketing of cull cows. For the sake of the discussion today, so Ken doesn't get too upset with me for going over, I'm not going to get into the marketing side of it, but let's talk about the reproductive part and somewhat the cost part on the front end of that. You see what that does? When you have failed reproduction and high cost on the front end of an animal, on the front end of an animal's life, you have reduced longevity, higher cost per pregnancy, and less lifetime profitability. So for the sake of one last kind of economic slide, I just wanted to show you how I set this up. I built a net present value model to look at the effect of longevity, just using some data that we had. And so I looked at, if you look at on the left, look at the first two columns on the left. So you start with 100 two-year-old cows. Okay, and if you say they have an 88% pregnancy rate, so we started with 100 bred heifers. Okay, they calved as two-year-olds. We had an 88% pregnancy rate with their second calf. We had a little bit of death loss, a minor culling rate. So we had 86 cows going into that three-year period and so on. And you follow that down through the years. We assumed a pregnancy rate of just 93 for running age cows. And then that tapers off on the granny cows. At the end, we just assumed at 13 years of age they were culled or sold. And so they were 2 to 13-year-old cows. On the ones on the right, the two columns on the right said, what if you reduced pregnancy rate or had pregnancy rate in 2 and 3-year-old cows that was at 75% pregnancy on young cows versus 88? What would that do to the effect on their net present value? So I used 5-year average cattle prices. I used our cow cost escalated at 3% per year over the course of this and assumed that we would be marketing just way up cull cows, which we don't do, and selling calves in the fall with a 5% discount rate. So if you reduce that 2- and 3-year-old pregnancy from 88 to 75, It reduced the longevity of the cow from 5.6 of that group of cows from 5.6 to 5.3 years, 3/10. You say, what's the big deal with that? But look at the difference in net present value by a 3/10 reduction in net present value by reducing the longevity on those cows. Only thing I changed was young cow reproduction. It resulted in a $210 difference in net present value over the course of the animal's lifetime. You say, yeah, but that's over their whole life. But you're turning cows every year, aren't you? You're putting replacements back in your herd. So it has a direct link to the bottom line of your business. And if you look at the cost of putting bred cattle into your herd, they're increasing, obviously. This is actual data from our ranch, at Padlock Ranch. If you see over a $200 increase in the cost to put a bred heifer into our herd from 2007 to 2014, couple hundred bucks. And this didn't have opportunity cost. This is just our cost to weaning, our cost to get them from weaning to summer grass, our cost to get them bred, pregnancy tested and booked on our assets as a bred heifer. We had a reduction there in 2014 of a couple reasons. One, we had some feed cost relief, right? And two, we expanded somewhat our number of heifers that we were grazing out on range. I'll touch on that. So to look at this and how it fits in with profitability, if you've got a net present value of 1821, and that absolute number isn't the right number. I wanted you to understand the relationship. But if it costs you $1,000 to put them in the herd, you make money, right? If it costs you $2,000, you lose money. Or if that's what you had to pay for them. Same concept Ron was talking about. What I want to get to is, can we build a better cow? What can we do with this young cow reproduction by management, the management effects to have the opportunity to build a better cow to improve longevity? We'll start with some data from South Dakota that Robin Salverson generated at Buffalo, South Dakota. And what we did in this study is we developed heifers in the dry lot. Real kind of a typical Western ranching dry lot situation, grass hay with about 3 pounds of wheat med supplement. Pretty modest, again, about 1.5 pounds a day. And then we compared that to cattle that were developed on range with distiller's grains. These cattle weren't managed to be at lighter weights, the ones on range. We supplemented them to gain similarly to those in the dry lot. Interestingly, when we turned all the cattle out to grass on the 18th, so we moved pastures for the ones that had been on winter pasture, turned the dry lot heifers out to grass, didn't supplement anything but mineral, the range-developed heifers gained over 2 pounds a day, and the dry lot heifers in Robin's data gained 0.3 pounds a day during that period of time. I don't think it was rumen effects, rumen microbial adaptation. We weren't feeding a lot of corn silage or a lot of grain. There had to be some kind of behavioral aspect, grazing behavior, et cetera. And so if you looked at the follow-up to that, George Perry at SDSU, kind of working off of these data, looked at the difference in taking animals that had experience to grazing prior to AI, either over the winter or at least in the spring prior to AI, and compared those that had been in the dry lot situation before AI, and measured a significant difference in gain from AI to pregnancy testing, 1.28 to 0.46. And so it's affected gain, but it also affected AI pregnancy rate to AI significantly. I guess it was about 10 units, 10 percentage units. So a significant difference. So is there some grazing behavior that's going on there? We've been working on this with Padlock for a number of years. Just a few examples. In 2011, 500 head of range-developed animals. They got 3 pounds of cake, and that's it. They weighed 770 pounds in July, but a 61% pregnancy to AI. Compared to 1,000 head in the feedlot, they weighed 880 in July, 100 pounds more. Same pregnancy rate, basically, to AI. 2012, 1,000 head range developed. Look at that. Real compensatory gain that year, 865 pounds in July, but a 65% pregnancy rate to AI versus 1,600 head of heifers in the feedlot with 61%. So those animals performed. This year, I didn't have the pregnancy data at the time that the nice CSU folks made us had our stuff turned in almost a month early. Sorry, Jason. 1,000 head basically in each bunch. Look at the weights in May. We got May weights on those animals off of grass. The range developed 660 pounds versus 800 pounds on the feedlot developed. Obviously a difference in average daily gain as we went to the AI weight in July. We breed in late July. The total cost, if you put some value on the rangeland, and your values would be different. They'd certainly be different in Nebraska. May even be economically viable, more viable to feed them. But in our system, just estimating the value of the grass, quite a economic advantage to having them range development. But one of the points is, what about this grazing behavior? Are we building a better cow? Do we want the first time that they have to graze in the winter be when they're pregnant with their calf, first or second calf? Seems like a tough go to me in an extensive cow system. So Fort Keogh research, just to turn the page just a little bit, looked at cows that were managed on marginal or adequate supplementation during the winter. This is about an 8-year study. The progeny from the heifers at 5 years of age, so the heifer progeny at 5 years of age from dams on the marginal program were actually heavier than those on the adequate program. They had a higher body condition score. And so was there some effect of the cow system on the ability of the animals to operate in that same kind of system they were asked to make a living in? That doesn't mean that you don't take care of the cattle. That was just two different systems. Rick Funston presented some data at these meetings a few years ago using Jeremy Martin's work that showed that protein supplementation during the winter improved the weaning weight of heifer progeny, but it also improved the pregnancy rate from 80 to 93%. The overall preg rate. You probably remember some of Rick's work there. Fetal programming. Well, we don't think about that very often either, do we? So in this idea of cow efficiency, reproduction is a driver. I think it is. It's a huge driver in the system. Improved reproduction in young cows obviously improves longevity. And young cow pregnancy may be influenced by management of the cow and the heifer calf. So this idea of learned grazing behavior, systems of cow management and fetal programming, with the charge to talk to you today about what do we need to know about this, I think these are some really big areas. What do you need to take home? That cause and effect are distant in time and space. How often do we make that mistake of saying, dang, these cows bred up poor last year, this fall. What I have done last winter? It may have not even been anything you did last winter. And it may have been something you did when that cow was in utero, or how you developed that heifer. And so what do we find ourselves doing as producers? Chasing our tails, trying to find the answer, because we're not seeing the distal relationship between cause and effect. And as usual, the areas of highest leverage are not the most obvious. I really appreciate your time today, and I look forward to a discussion at the bullpen session. Thank you.